Christmas highlights the basic desires that we all share as human beings. And especially, I think, that one little phrase I mentioned this morning will be asked innumerable times in these next few days as we approach Christmas season, Christmas Day, Christmas Eve. In fact, in the United States of America this month, the most often question will probably be, what do you want? And I think it's an opportunity for us to ponder tonight, to pause long enough to think about that in its broadest sense. Because if everybody is asking the question in this time, what do you want? And they're trying to say, what can I get you that you would like? Maybe it's a time for all of us to examine with that as a backdrop, looking beyond the seasonal things and to all of humanity, and to ask that same question. Because everybody in this whole world shares a common desire for some basic things, some basic needs, some basic wants that everyone shares. And if we can tap into those, and if we can answer, listening to what they're asking for, we can show them who and what can truly solve those basic desires, the cries of their hearts. If we were to ask that question, what do you want tonight? The answer would come back in many different lights. From the gray, choking smog of Mexico City, as it's soon to be, before the end of our century, the single most populous spot on the face of the earth, with maybe 20 or 20 plus million folks in a dense sector of that sinking lake bed just south of our border. You know, the answer would come back the same from those people there. If you went to the azure sky and the white beaches of Polynesia, where it seems like everything would be perfect with the white sand, the crystal clear water, and the cloudless sky 300 days out of the year. And you ask those folks, climbing their palm trees and around fishing, they would have the same answer. They desire the same things. If we were to go to the dark and foreboding valleys of the Himalayas, Tibet, Nepal, to that mystery city, Kathmandu, and look at those people with all the occult, with the incense burning, with all their mysterious ways about them, you would find that they are looking for the same basic heart cries to be met. I've been in the damp rainforests of South America. I found nothing different. Even in the most wealthiest spot on this earth, which has now become the city of Tokyo. Tokyo's real estate alone is worth more than most of the countries of the world put together with the inflated prices these days. But no matter where we would go, it's the same. Everyone has three basic needs. And even here tonight, I think if I could get out of each of us what is really on our heart, we have the same basic needs of life. And what are they? Well, the first one is happiness or pleasure. That's in our Bill of Rights, isn't it? The pursuit of pleasure, that's a promised right. And I think everybody in this world, down deep, if they could really get to what they want, they would be pursuing happiness, in pursuit of happiness. I saw a film recently called Endless Vacations. That's kind of like the dream of everyone, to just be on vacation constantly. It's the pursuit of happiness and pleasure. The second thing that most people in this world, if not every single one of them, are looking for is peace of mind, or the other side of that coin, freedom from guilt. And see, as people are pursuing happiness, sometimes they go down a road that produces, when that event transpires, guilt. And then they have to learn what to do with that guilt, because they found happiness, but then kind of like a residual thing comes that guilt. And then the last thing that has plagued humanity from the very beginning, people are desperately searching for security. That's why we have gates and bars and locks and guns and walls and concrete and steel, because people want security. And you know, those three basic desires may translate differently in various cultures. In India, happiness would be being in a high caste. Freedom from guilt would be pleasing and pacifying the innumerable gods. And true security would be having a lot of gold, preferably hidden away in the mud of your chimney, or else as a woman wearing it in jewelry all over. But just make sure that you had a lot of gold. In the Amazon, it would be lots of food and wives. That would bring lots of happiness. Have no evil spirits after you. Make sure you had all your fetishes just right. And make sure that the heads of all your enemies were hanging on your wall, and you'd have security. You know, it translates different in different places. In Western society, happiness would be a good name and a good family, right? Those are the admirable things. In fact, the family is the theme of the 80s. If you write a book on the family, it will sell well, as Swindoll has amply demonstrated with his Growing Wise in Family Life. Peace of mind is by having a respectable amount of religion, right? No matter, it doesn't matter what it is, you just have to have a respectable amount. You can't be uncivil. And it doesn't matter if your religion is your own made-up religion, or if it's a mainline religion, or if it's some peripheral fanatic thing. It's just as long as you have a respectable amount of religion, even if that's a new age or a humanistic thing. And of course, in Western society, security comes with sound investments. Make sure you have sound investments. In North Kingstown, it might be being healthy and lots of friends. That would make us happy. Making sure we're tied to some church, because New England has such a traditional emphasis, and so make sure you're with a church, even if it doesn't teach anything or believe anything. And make sure you have a house and a good job, because we're headed to a recession. But all those things, basically, we share with all the world, everyone seeking for happiness, peace of mind, and security, no matter how you translate it. And in all the earth, there's only one book that God wrote, and you're holding that. And tonight, we're going to turn in that book to near the end of it, to 1 John, because God gave us a divine perspective on this. It was no mystery to God what the basic heart throbs of humanity are. God knows that because He created us from dust. He breathed into us the breath of life. He is the one who gives to us our life's breath. He is the one who has appointed a day when we are going to be judged, and everything in between He knows about. And therefore, He would have a lot to say about happiness, peace of mind, and security. And in the book of 1 John, we have divine perspectives on those three needs. And I'd like to just basically share them with you so that we can lay hold on them together. Because God has a lot to say about how to have true pleasure and happiness, how to have true peace of mind with no guilt, and how to have security that's real and that won't go away. But before we dive into 1 John, I want you to just sit back, and I want to introduce you to the author, because I think that's what makes this portrait so powerful to me. And as the Lord has dealt with me, I found myself this week in the house, and even Bonnie, I shared a little of this with the ladies' Bible study earlier in the week, and a couple times in different situations we were involved in, Bonnie said, happiness, peace of mind, security. A subtle reminder of what we know from the Word of God. But who wrote so clearly on this, and who so powerfully laid down these key elements of human existence and our basic needs? And we know that's the Apostle John. First of all, in general, he was a disciple of Jesus Christ. He's known as the beloved disciple. He was also known as the Son of Thunder. He was no milquetoast by any means. He was quite an amazing fella. He got so upset one time in a witnessing venture, and the people wouldn't listen to him. He said, "Let's burn them up, Lord. Burn them up. You know, they're worthless. Consume them with fire." He also was in quite close relation with Christ. And he spent his life condensing down the time that he spent with Jesus Christ. Remember, he's the one that said Jesus did so many things that the whole world couldn't contain the books if they were to be written about him. But he did condense down the life and the impact of Jesus Christ on his life into five books, five monumental books: a gospel, a revelation, and three epistles. One-fifth of our New Testament comes from his hand. in his pen